This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com. On the August 23rd edition of the show, Coy's guest is John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute. One of the topics of conversation is the recent controversy involving police questioning of minors, something that's come up in connection with the so-called Albemarle High School bombing conspiracy plot. One of the students involved did not have a lawyer or a parent present during one of his initial interviews with police.
I guess the question would be that, as far as does a child have a right to a lawyer, the Supreme Court has held that minors can waive their constitutional right to an attorney by saying, I don't want a lawyer. That's troublesome. But I think that does a parent have a right to assert that right of counsel?
And, of course, the judges have ruled that you don't. You can't.
In this case, this state, but there are other states have ruled otherwise. So Virginia's a little different than other states. But I think that needs to go up again and be argued another way. And so I think that I think everyone deserves an attorney. If you're possibly facing a jail sentence, you need a lawyer in the room. And I would say this to most policemen. I think the policemen should bring those lawyers in. They should say, you really need to have an attorney in here. The reason I say that is that the philosophical undergirdings of a policeman or anybody that's a government official, they're servants of the people. They're there to serve the people. And the first thing they have to think about when they serve the people is protecting the Constitution and constitutional rights. That's the first thing. And the Constitution guarantees a right to an attorney. And I think that we wouldn't want a confession from a minor where an attorney isn't present. I don't know why we would want that. I mean, it's just I had five children, a 15-year-old, a 14-year-old, 13-year-old, they have no clue. That first of all, they come out, many of our public schools, not knowing their rights anyway.
Yeah.
And I think what the schools are going to have to start doing, the local schools here, Albemarle High School, whatever, they're really going to stress that kids do have rights. You should ask for a lawyer. Don't waive that right. Even if you're guilty, don't waive that right, because you deserve your day in court. You're not going to get it if you confess to something you didn't do.
Yeah.
Which we see probably happen with the acquittal we saw last week.
One of the 13-year-olds was acquitted, found not guilty of having anything to do with any of this, and it makes us all wonder as a community, well, what was there originally then?
And the word community is important. You mentioned the word community. Yeah, we are community, and the police are part of that community. They are part of us, and they should be protecting us. And they're not bad. A lot of policemen are not bad policemen. I think the problem
Absolutely
most
not.
Policemen is the first thought they have should be to protect the Constitution. That person sitting in front of them, especially a child, maybe a hardened criminal, they've just seen murder somebody, they're going to have an emotional response. But you're talking about children. So these children need to have their rights. And we're teaching children a bad lesson when we pull them into a room, whether we're policemen, school officials or whatever, interrogate them without their parents there. Now, you're talking about minors. Minors should always at least have their parents there, their lawyer there as well, so that when they're being asked questions, they're informed, they know what they're saying, they're not being completely silly, which a lot of kids are. Even these 13-year-old, 14-year-old kids that might be listening to this program, you're not mature enough to be making these decisions. That's why you're protected. Think about this. You can't sign a contract, an enforceable contract. Most of these kids are in this case. You can't even get your ears pierced without parental approval, but you can confess to a crime without your lawyer there. I mean, does that make any sense
yeah.
in the state of Virginia? So the law needs to be changed, and I think they can do it in the legislature. So I think if people that are really concerned about this issue, you need to go to your legislature, the House of Delegates, get together as a group. I mean, the Constitution starts out with those three extraordinary words, we the people, which means that the people are the guardians of their rights. And so you have to exercise them. I mean, being upset's one thing, but getting together in a group, a concerned parents groups, and going down to Richmond and say, hey, let's get some protection for our children as parents. At least have the parents there.
Yeah. I want to underscore something you mentioned. John Whitehead is our guest, the executive director of the Rutherford Institute. Want to just underscore something you said in terms of the police officers. I've said this on this show many times. I really admire these men and women for putting their lives on the line every single day, middle of the night, early morning, to protect us. And many of them feel a calling to do this. You know, they're not paid the best salaries in the world. It really is a job that you have to love to do. And like in any other profession, there's always a few bad apples that ruin it for everybody else. And my fear is that you have people who don't really understand everything about our rights and make it difficult for all the good police officers to do their job effectively.
Every poll that's conducted nationally over the last, I don't know how many years, the most recent kind of crazy one was back in March where no one even knew their rights. They knew the Simpson family, knew all the members of the Simpson family, knew all the judges of American Idol, but didn't know anything about the First Amendment, none of their rights. People actually thought the right to own a pet was in the First Amendment or a right to drive a car. Just crazy stuff. So, but I'll make this. Not only is the average citizen, but sometimes the policeman, many of our policemen don't know that either. They're just not well trained. I spoke recently and someone said, I think we have a lot of bad eggs in the police force. And I said, I disagree with that. I don't think the policemen are trained properly. Their first impulse, as I say, is first of all, they got to know their rights, but they got to say, I don't want to violate these people's rights. I'm there to serve, protect, and defend.
Yeah.
But remember, we pay their salary. They're public servants. And I would say something else. If you fear the police any more than you do your city council member, something's wrong, because you shouldn't fear the police. The police should be there working with us and making sure that we don't do something incredibly stupid if we're not guilty.
John Whitehead is our guest. He's the executive director of the Rutherford Institute. We're discussing the Albemarle bomb plot case and more right here on News Radio 1070 WINA. We invite you to join the conversation. Floyd, hang on with me, my friend. We'll be right back. John Whitehead is the executive director of the Rutherford Institute. He joins us about once a month to chat about your rights. And John, Jim Campbellis, who's the Commonwealth's prosecutor, who made the decision to move forward with prosecuting all four of these children involved in this bomb plot, quote-unquote bomb plot case, he was on television last night responding for the first time to the public to questions that have been asked about the obvious question, why did you prosecute this one child, obviously, who had nothing to do with it? And it makes you ask questions about the other three. He said, well, there's always some people that don't like what we do, and I'm quoting, there's always some people that are angry with the result. And he also said, we were disappointed with the decision in the acquittal, but the system works. And it just sounds to me like a talking point cop-out that a prosecutor would use. Well, I lost, but the system works. It's like, well, I tried to hang you, but the rope broke. So good old rope. Way to go, rope.
Well, you know, I thought there was a good chance if I ever got to a jury, you might get these kind of results after just what I'd read in the newspapers. But the system does work much better if in the beginning the person has an attorney and it's done properly from the beginning, you probably would never get to this point where you're prosecuting this particular individual and what happened here. But the point is, I think that the thing I worry about some of these cases and what we're doing in some of our cities, and even here in Charlottesville, is we're just kind of, it looks to me like we're focusing on the minors and what's going to happen when the majors come along. We're part of these issues like this. What's happening to the real criminals out there? They're selling drugs and whatever they're doing, if we're focusing, put a lot, tremendous amount of energy on this particular issue.
Yeah. And of course, when Jim Campbell says the system works, well, it only works if you can afford to appeal. It only works if you haven't been intimidated from appealing. And it didn't work for the people who can't do that.
That's exactly correct. And that's why a lot of minorities have a huge complaint, because a lot of them can't afford the lawyers in the first place. They end up serving time. Well, many times, as we find, and I'm part of the Innocence Commission here in Virginia, we find many people are innocent. They just can't afford lawyers.
Let's go to the phones. Floyd, you get the award for the most patience. I appreciate it. Go right ahead. You're on with.
Thank you. First off, I'd like to congratulate you for airing some very timely subjects lately.
Well, thank
you're
you.
Doing an excellent job.
Thank you, Floyd.
When I watched this case unwind like layers of an onion with all the different revelations, and a lot of it was not revealed because of the statements by Campbell that it was not to be discussed, I was just amazed. I was shocked, and then I was really saddened, because I've always considered the police my friends. I have personal friends on the police force, and I always have only the highest regard for them and for what they do. But in this case, something failed, and it bothered me a lot that the parent of this boy, in trying to help the system resolve what was going on and get to the bottom of this bomb plot, ended up putting his son in extreme jeopardy, and in fact ended up with him convicted.
That's exactly
really
right.
Bothered me.
That's exactly
and,
right.
And the fact that they wouldn't let the parent call for an attorney, the child didn't know to ask for an attorney, they deceived the child. I went back to the Richard Jewell case in Atlanta. It was a very similar situation. Richard Jewell was probably not the most intelligent guy in the world, and they took advantage of that. And in this case, a child who doesn't have enough knowledge, they took advantage of him. And that was very poor. And as a result of that, my position has changed in a defensive mode now. I sit down, I have a 14-year-old son. I set him down. I said, if you ever get questioned by the police in the future, whether or not they say you're a suspect or anything, you ask for an attorney or ask to talk to me. And that was a sad thing to do, but I had to do it.
Yeah, we sort of are. Floyd, thank you so much for the call, and I think you're absolutely right. John, have we reached this day and age, post-Columbine, post-9/11, where you can still respect the police, you can still admire these people? I do, and would sing their praises until the sun goes down. However, have we reached an age where we have, like Floyd, we have to sit our kids down and say, you can't talk to the police without a lawyer. I don't want you doing that.
It starts at home. I think that's an excellent idea. Floyd should be doing that. And also the schools must do that. So if the schools aren't doing that, they aren't teaching it in political science class or whatever, they need to do that. But I think that what we see happening nationwide, there is a pattern that's developing, and we see it virtually everywhere. In fact, there's a report that the Cato Institute just issued. It's called Overkill. It's about police raids on homes. Reading through that 70-page report with footnotes will shock you. So we're seeing a lot of police just entering homes now, no knock. The problem is that most of the time it appears to be for a guy who has one marijuana joint, which usually nothing happened at all.
Right,
but
right.
Now they're breaking down doors to get to.
They're
going to
bring the army out for that joint.
And they're making mistakes. A lady just recently, they went through the doors, knocked her over, and whatever. They had the wrong house. She died of a heart attack right in front of them. But that Cato Institute, you can go to their website. I don't know what it is, but it's a great report. But I think that it's what Marshall McLuhan, the old media analyst in the 60s,
right,
used to say. He says, when you're discussing something, that means that it's already happened. And people say, are we in a police state? I would say that we're really – we're either in a police state, we're right on the rim, the edge of going into police state, because people today do fear the police. They're setting their kids down, they're talking to them, they're giving them lectures, they're trying to get the schools involved. You see these instances, you see them going through doors. A case that was on our website this week of the lady in Miami, the attorney who went out to protest in the streets when she thought her city had become a police state, she's carrying a sign, they had fun shooting her with the rubber bullets and knocked her over and hit her in the head. And then now there are a video surfaced where they're all joking and laughing about the police, which, again, that's poor training. Whoever's leading those policemen is doing a very bad job, and the police aren't trained. So I think we need to demand that. But I think we've reached the state in this country where we're going to have to train our children up well, and they should be trained. They should know that. That's what the Constitution is all about. But the schools have got to start doing it as well.
Yeah. We're talking with John Whitehead, Executive Director of the Rutherford Institute. We invite you to join the conversation here at News Radio 1070 WINA. The phone number is 977-1070. We're going to take a break for some local news here at the bottom of the hour. Very quickly, we want to go to the phones. Our good friend George is on the phone from Albemarle County. George, go right ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to ask John Whitehead, as an attorney, didn't these parents just give up a lot when they said, come down to the station? They said yes instead of saying no. I mean, if a policeman rings my doorbell and says, may I come in? The answer is no. And by the way, no means no. They can't come in. And people who violated that particular reality have done so at their peril. And I hate to be so really hard-nosed about this, but I'd like to point out, as I have once before, that this family spent the equivalent of a four-year college education clearing their son.
George, I can tell you, I don't know the exact number, but I can tell you it was a lot more than that.
Well, depends on whether you're going to Harvard or not.
I was told it was many, many tens of thousands of dollars.
Well, hey, $100,000 barely gets you a semester at Harvard.
George, thank you for the call. Let's let John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute respond. We really are in a different age.
I think we're in a different age. Yeah, I think that as a parent, I would have went down. I mean, as far as them demanding, you don't have to. Of course you don't. But I think the real error here was not going down there with a lawyer immediately. And that's what happened here is a couple of things. One is the young people involved didn't know their rights. They gave them up automatically. They weren't taught in school. And some of it goes back upon the parents. But I think we're starting to come alive now. We're starting to see that things are not like they were 20 or 30 years ago. Things have changed in this country. But the key was they needed a lawyer. But let me read an email I just received from a lady in a northwestern state. And this kind of just got it a couple days ago. But this kind of I read this email. It just kind of set me back. Here's what she says. She says, "We live in a small rural town, moved here in 1961. I don't remember what year the state troopers moved to headquarters into our town. Our young people were plagued with tickets for even the smallest offenses. Troopers had to get their limits for the month. People make jokes about that, but it has been true. Every kid I knew was getting ticketed for something, but now it's so much worse. I raised my kids to respect the police. If they did something wrong and got caught, they deserved it and should take their punishment. I have no respect for the police. I feel threatened and fearful of them. They are aggressive and intimidating. They lie and are abusive. And we don't even know how to fight them. I am not a minority here, but people are afraid if they speak out, they will be targeted. We're just a small town. I'm a 60-year-old grandmother, and I just don't care anymore if they do target me. I'm afraid they're going to kill someone." Then she goes on to ask me what she can do.
My God.
That's in a really small town in a northwestern state. I don't want to give it away.
Yeah.
The thing is... As I said, we're seeing more and more of this. It's not in just big cities, it's small towns. There's a feeling now, for some reason, among a lot of our policemen, that the average citizen is the enemy now, for whatever reason. And I think it's dangerous. I think she's right. She says, "I'm afraid they're going to kill someone." And that's where we're at today.
Yeah. And it really is. It's so chilling. And it makes you think that, this case here in Albemarle County, whether we're talking about an over-aggressive police or prosecutor's office, I don't know. I don't have enough information to say that explicitly. But it clearly is a manifestation of what's going on in the country in terms of things that make us stop and think about our rights. And make us ask questions that we should as a community in terms of what are our police doing? What are our prosecutors who are on the, paid by our taxes? What are they doing? What kind of decisions are they making? And how does that, especially, it gets back to what really concerns me, is how does all of this affect our children?
The founder of the University of Virginia, Thomas Jefferson, said the people have to be vigilant. The problem is those who are taking away our freedoms have been more vigilant in taking them away. So the answer to all this is as simple as you could be. That is, the people have to get involved now. You have to know what's going on in your government. You have to go down to the city council. There needs to be a special committee that can be appealed to deal with abuse by police if there's those kind of things. But you're going to have to get involved. And like Floyd that called in earlier, you're going to have to sit down with your children if you have them and teach them what their rights are, and the schools are going to have to do it.
John Whitehead is our guest, executive director of the Rutherford Institute. If we can just change gears here, I would like to talk to you about a recent commentary you wrote. And for folks who don't know, please visit the Rutherford Institute website. It's www.rutherford.org. And you can find commentaries, John Whitehead commentaries that you write. It's almost once a week.
Once a week.
You have a new editorial that's up, a commentary on the state of affairs, things that are going on. And
it's about 100, 250 papers across the country.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, it's
a lot
of all newspapers.
And they're fascinating pieces. And you had one recently that was in a local paper here.
The Hook.
It was in The Hook, of course.
Yeah.
And it was, the title of it was, "What Would Jesus Bomb?" Again, I'll say that again. You didn't mishear me. What would Jesus bomb? Can you tell us about this article? What led you to write it, and what we're looking at here?
Well, I was watching the wars on TV, and you can't avoid today because they present war as entertainment. But I was driving in one morning, and there was a car in front of me that had a bumper sticker, and it said, "What would Jesus bomb?" And I said, "What a wonderful question," because. And I'm not trying to be anti-George Bush here, but George Bush is a self-avowed Christian who says Jesus is the master and all that. But I've read the New Testament very, very carefully, and the Jesus I see there is this fellow who basically, you could sum up Jesus in one sentence, he was a fellow who went around helping people, and nonviolent, and the Prince of Peace, as we call him at Christmas. So I was wondering how we stack that up against, and this is just my opinion, folks, killing civilians. up to possibly 100,000 in Iraq, and the civilians we were seeing killed in Lebanon and all those things, and in Israel. And I was wondering, shouldn't someone say something about that and just raise the question? Because people who visit me from foreign countries, I had some people from Australia, and they said, America, the wonderful Christian nation. I'm not sure about that one. But that's the way they view us. And the question is, what would Jesus bomb? I started thinking about that. And the more I looked at it, my conclusion was, I asked a number of people. I asked them that question. And people started stumbling and mumbling, but they all came to one basically conclusion, nobody. So
Jesus wouldn't use a bomb.
I don't think so, no. I always say, can you imagine Jesus carrying an Uzi? Probably not. The question is, and I think we have to face as a country, and I'm a former military officer. I was an infantry officer. And I think you have to fight wars, but the question is, how do you fight the wars? And I thought what a neat opportunity for our president, who says he's a Christian, when you see civilians getting, and folks, if you're not up on this, a lot of civilians die in these wars.
A whole lot of them.
And you're seeing children with no arms and no feet and laying in these terrible hospitals in countries where the doctors are and not good medicine and those things. Shouldn't we really be focusing on that and raising that question? I thought, what a great opportunity for a president who says he's a Christian to come out and say, well, there's something wrong here, and really address that. I think the world would probably stand up and applaud him.
Yeah, and of course, it's interesting in your piece, you talk about action on the part of the Methodist Church?
Yeah, some of the leaders of the United Methodist Church, because President Bush and Vice President Cheney are both self-proclaimed Methodists. They basically came out and said, the statement's pretty clear, and you can read it in the commentary, but they raise all this and just, they basically said, Jesus said to feed, clothe, and shelter the least of these, not starve, strip, and bomb them. And so I think there comes a time in the world, and warfare has gotten to such a point that the weapons are so awesome, and what it does to people, and the residue that's left over from radiation, and the poisoning, and the devastation of countries, that it would be good to heal the world, start moving in that direction.
John Whitehead is executive director of the Rutherford Institute. He joins us about once a month here in studio to talk about our rights as American citizens and the issues facing our country and our community. We're going to take a quick break. This is Charlottesville right now. John Whitehead is the executive director and founder of the Rutherford Institute, known internationally, an expert in your rights. You were telling me during the break, and this absolutely blows my mind, and this is a subject for your commentary that'll be published next week, the black boxes in automobiles. What is this about?
Well, they're called EDRs. One-third of all vehicles on the road today have them. Most people have no clue this is happening. 64% of this year's models have EDRs. They're called event data recorders. And what they do is they presently, and they're very primitive now, they retain up to about 20 seconds of data before you crash, speed, whether you're wearing your seatbelt, and those kind of things. The thing is now that they've developed new technology, which will a lot of your rental cars are using, which will record for 300 hours of driving activity, which is seatbelt usage, how fast you're going, how you brake, and all these kind of things. And what it amazingly can be downloaded into a computer. And of course, we know who would use it. Anybody in authority could pull it out of your car and look at it and see, did you wear your seatbelt last week in your drive? If you didn't, of course, it's a violation of the law. So we're talking a bit about the police state idea.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing about this, and this is the neat thing, California now has passed a law saying that you have to inform people these are in your cars, and 9 other states have followed suit. So people are starting to wake up.
So car manufacturers are producing these cars. 64% of new cars now have these boxes in them.
And they're not telling you.
And they're not telling you they're in there. And the box is in your car, and it has the ability to record your speed if you're wearing your seatbelt. Doesn't have audio recording capabilities yet.
Not yet.
But that's a logical, it would make sense that we'll get to the point where every car has this little black box like a plane does. But like you're pointing out, that's incredible power that can be misused.
It can be misused, and it's like some of our great men have said about legislation. It's not the legislation; it's potential for abuse. For this here, I mean, if people want this and they're informed, it's entirely different. But when they're putting it in your car,
you should have the choice.
You should have a choice. And like I say, California has kind of taken the lead and said that you can't do this. You've got to tell people these things are in the car. If they don't want them, you got to take them out. But the question is, why wouldn't that be something optional? Why is it in 64% of the cars being made today, and headed toward 100%. But Again, I think it's the potential for abuse.
That is amazing. And it really does sort of underscore this whole police state atmosphere. And it makes you think, I know we were talking about V for Vendetta, which is an amazing film. And, you know, you think about police states when it happens. People aren't dragged into a police state, John. I mean, they go, you look at what happened in Germany. They went into a police state with flags waving and singing the praises of Germany, the greatest country in the history of the world, and long live Germany. And they were thrilled, if, as long as you weren't one of the undesirables. They were thrilled that that Hitler was in charge.
Well, when they made Hitler, when Hitler wanted to be der Führer, that's the title he wanted, and there was an election, 88% of the people agreed he should be called the leader of the Führer, or the totalitarian leader. But the thing about what Hitler said is one of his great quotes is how lucky it is for rulers, how lucky it is for rulers that people do not think. But they do think, I think he was wrong about that. People think about they get distracted by trivial things, entertainment. In Germany, obviously, they got poisoned ideas. Hitler's book, Mein Kampf, they did think between 1925 and 1932, 200,000 copies of that book were sold in Germany. That was the blueprint for totalitarianism. So people do think. The problem is it's not clear thinking. So it goes back to the premise that we were talking about earlier. Our schools have really have to reorient how they're teaching kids to think. And they have to think not so much cynically, but critically. We have to, James Madison said, we ought to mistrust everyone in power. And the reason he said that is because of that great maxim, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. It's that first part that bothers me most, power corrupts.
Yeah.
And it does. It corrupts everybody.
We don't have a required course that a your rights course. I mean, we teach government, but we don't teach
civics anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
And we should. I mean, shouldn't we require our kids, if you want a high school degree in this community, you are going to understand your rights as a citizen.
I know people that have just got their citizenship, who know the Constitution inside and out. They know it better than many of the Americans listening to this broadcast tonight, and that's shameful.
Yeah. But what can we do? Because we got a lot of people listening who say, well, what do we do about it?
Okay. People say, well, gee, the Constitution's hard to read. Well, the Bill of Rights is only 462 words. You can't read 462 words. We have a pocket Constitution. Anybody that wants one free can call our office, and I'll send you a free copy. Read it.
And I urge everybody who listens to this program to do that. I've had folks email me and call me and say, you had John Whitehead on, and he was offering a free Constitution. How do I get that? Tell them again, remind folks, how you can get a free copy of the U.S. Constitution.
Call our offices at 978-3888, and we'll put one in the mail to you. You can come by and we'll give you a couple. But the thing is, you have to read it, especially the Bill of Rights. Remember, the Bill of Rights is only 462 words. Know the Bill of Rights. Sit down in front of your kids and go through the Bill of Rights. And I have an essay in it, but there's tons of stuff on our website, but it's there. I mean, it's like I say, the people who drafted our Constitution did it with extraordinary foresight, and they began it with we the people. And it's the we the people. That's me and you. We have to keep free. If we want freedom, we have to keep it.
Yeah.
Fight for it.
And, of course, I'm thinking again, just to return to the subject we've spent most of the day talking about, the bomb plot cases, which, you know, information continues to come out every day. I know the Lisa Province at The Hook, a reporter at The Hook, interviewed Chief Miller today, and he told her, I wouldn't do anything different. And so I find that a little troubling that the chief of police would say, I wouldn't do anything different. So in other words, he's saying, I think it's totally fine that the police can question these kids using manipulative interrogation techniques alone in a room without a lawyer, without their parents. And according to Supreme Court rulings, you'd know more about this than I, but I've been told the police has the right to lie. They're allowed to lie to people that they're interrogating. Supreme Court has said, go right ahead. If you think that's going to help you build a case.
Well, what the Supreme Court said, in specific to this case, is that minors can waive their right to an attorney. And it gets back to our premise that people have to teach their children. The schools have to do it. And we see some lady has called in that she says civics is taught in the 7th and 8th grade, but it's not taught everywhere across the country because I asked. Great, I'm glad it is. But I think in addition to civics, I think you're right. There needs to be a course called Your Rights in American society, and go through the Bill of Rights and tell, do not give away your rights, and be very, very clear. And there are a lot of good books out there. In fact, one of my good friends, Nat Hinhoff, has got a great book called The War Against the Bill of Rights, which every school child should read.
Yeah, and Nat Hinhoff, of course, you communicate with regularly, and you were telling me during the break that he's very troubled by some of the things that are going on in our country today.
Oh, Nat Nat told me that, and we were talking recently, and he said that people thought not the 1950s with the McCarthy era and the Red Scare was bad. He says what's coming on us is going to be a lot worse if we don't get out in the streets and picket and teach our children and just raise up a generation of people who really understand. And the problem is that we face immediate obstacles with what we see on TV and entertainment. People are greatly distracted today. And we see that in the polls where, as I said, people know more about The Simpsons and American Idol than they do what's in the First Amendment or the Fourth Amendment, which says that you have a right not to be searched illegally.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.